Hi, I'm Carmen LaBurge. Thanks for listening to the podcast of Mornings with Carmen LaBurge.
Today is the day you have made. I will rejoice and be glad in it. Today is the day you have made. I will rejoice and be glad in it. And I won't worry about tomorrow. I'm trusting.
Good morning. Today is the day. Today is the day the Lord has made. We will rejoice and be glad in it. You are listening to Mornings with Carmen. I am your host, Carmen LaBurge. Thank you for bringing me along this morning, wherever you are headed on this Monday morning, February the 25th, 2019. Let us remember God has made everything beautiful in its time. Also, God has put eternity into our hearts. So, you know, we really live if we deny the reality of God, if we live this day without a conscious awareness of God's presence and God's provision, we're really denying reality itself. This God impulse that people have, this, you know, when something tragic happens, what do people say? I mean, they cry out to God, and it's almost reflexive. Well, why is that? Well, not only do the heavens declare the glory of God and the sky above proclaims his handiwork, as we know from Psalm 19, but we know from Romans 1 that all of creation reveals God's invisible attributes, his eternal power, his divine nature. They're clearly evident in creation itself. Romans says, so people are actually without excuse. We are actually without excuse if we do not, having known God, honor him as such and give thanks to him. So let's do that today. Let's be sure that whatever else we're doing today, whatever else we're reading and talking about and focusing on and considering, let us be consciously aware that God is, that God has spoken, that God is present and powerful and working out his redemptive purposes in the course of human history, which means in the course of our lives today, that he is being revealed in creation itself and by the power of the Holy Spirit at work within you, God is being revealed through you today to others. That's the exciting role of the Christian in the world today. We actually get to be beautiful living demonstrations of the gospel of Jesus Christ to other people. And so, friends, as we turn our attention to the news of the day and the issues at hand, Brandon Showalter from the Christian Post will be here to talk with us through a number of today's headlines. Let me just ask you this. If you watched the Oscars last night, what moral messaging or virtue signaling did you happen to see? And I like to always think about this when we have any of those red carpet events. You know, they ask people like, who are you wearing? Well, I hope that today you have not only put on the full armor of God, but that you are covered in Christ. I hope you're wearing Christ out into the world today. You're listening to Mornings with Carmen. I am Carmen LaBurge. We'll be right back. That beautiful music sung is the indication that Brandon Showalter is here. Now, that's not the voice of Brandon Showalter, but Brandon Showalter from the Christian Post says that his favorite thing to do in life is to sing. And so we open our segment with him with some beautiful singing. Brandon, welcome back.
Good morning, Carmen. So good to be with you.
So will you be singing on the new Christian Post podcast?
Oh, I that is yet to be determined. So who knows?
So let's.
I have to treat the listeners to something someday.
Yeah. So you're going to be hosting a podcast with the Christian Post. Let's just start with that. What can people expect to hear, and how can they find it?
Well, we have just begun and have done a few interviews, and so we're in the process now of getting them edited. What our aim is so far, and we're still developing it, is to bring, like we do at the Christian Post, bring the gospel to bear on the news of the day and to help get people thinking, discussing life's big questions, you know, small questions, big questions from a biblical perspective, and highlight the stories that get people thinking, and just do a good podcast.
So there's a really sassy host of a morning show you should have on.
Well, you know, I think that would be great.
That's total self-promotion.
We just might have to do that.
Okay, let's talk about women who have been banned from Twitter for being something that a lot of people are not even going to know what this acronym is. So I'm going to actually let you unpack it. What is a TERF, and why have women been banned from Twitter for being TERFs?
Well, TERF, spelled T-E-R-F, means trans-exclusionary radical feminist. And one
What? You have to stop right there. Trans-exclusionary radical feminist, because that is quite an identity moniker. Tell us what
it's
means.
It's a mean name. It's a slur, really. And it is a for women who don't believe that men can be women. This is how crazy it's gotten, Carmen. They are being kicked off Twitter and other social media platforms for saying things like men cannot be women and men are not women, and for misgendering, which is referring to someone who identifies as trans as the opposite pronoun as he or she wishes. There's always been a strain of feminists who, you know, reject this entire transsexual, transgender identity. They argue that the oppression of women through the ages has been based on their biology, and so for a man to claim that he is a woman, as we are seeing now more and more, is the height of, I mean, there has never been a more patriarchal claim than for a man to say that he is a woman, for a man to say he's a woman just because he says so. And so transgender activists call these women who are feminists but don't regard them as women as TERFs, as that's their mean name they call them.
Okay, so I think it's fair to say that should anyone be paying attention, I am, now here would be the question. Do I define myself, or would other people define me, as a feminist? I suppose you have to start there and then work your way back, because certainly I refer to people by their, by their biological gender, regardless of how they refer to themselves. And so, because I'm just not willing to suspend reality for someone's, completely contrary version of reality. And so I do think this is complicated because we now have requirements on some of these social media platforms that if we're going to use, let's say, Twitter, then we have to abide by their policies. And their policy is you're never going to misgender someone, and you are never going to refer to someone, you're never going to dead name them, right? So I'm, on Twitter, theoretically, I am never to refer to Bruce Jenner as Bruce Jenner, even though he is Bruce Jenner and he is a he. I am now to always in every, moment refer to him as Caitlyn Jenner and refer to him as she. Now, that turning reality on its head and then requiring us, if we're going to participate on certain social media platforms, requiring us to participate in the collective delusion of our age, that's really what we're talking about, is it not?
That's exactly right. It is social engineering. It is positively dystopian, forcing people to lie. And people with a lot of money and influence are manipulating our ability to participate in the new public square. And it's, I mean, this word is overused, but it's just the only word that is relevant. It's Orwellian.
Okay, so yeah. And Martina Navratilova is a name that a lot of listeners will recognize. And she has actually claimed that allowing transgender women to compete in professional tennis, actually she expands it to professional sports in general, but she's specifically here talking about tennis. She says it's insane and it's cheating. The backlash against her, which, let's remind people, she came out as a lesbian in, the very early 80s. She has been, she is a feminist, and she has been a part of the LGBT. I don't know. Maybe not. Maybe this is where the T throws some terrific confusion into the conversation, even among the gay and lesbian community.
It's absolutely true. And I was conversing with some lesbian and feminist friends not so long ago, and they tell me that basically that everything is all about the T now, and your average gay and lesbian, your rank and file gay and lesbian hates that stuff, but the people at the top who control, you know, the powers that be in that world have decided that this is just sort of the new front of civil rights, and therefore, no matter how much they disagree, they're basically powerless against this juggernaut. And so, yeah, Martina, as we've seen, made a perfectly rational, you know, comment about how it's not fair for athletes who merely say they are the opposite sex. They have biological males have an unfair competitive advantage in light of their bone structure and muscle mass, and women have fought for years to have their own sports. And all of that is now being taken away because we are saying, our society is saying, men can claim to be women.
All right. So, Brandon, let's take a quick break. And then when we come back, I'd love to talk with you about this piece you have posted at the Christian Post about China, China hearing the gospel via Africa. We'll be right back on Mornings with Carmen. I'm Carmen LaBerge. Good morning. Welcome back to Mornings with Carmen. I'm your host, Carmen LaBerge, continuing my conversation with Brandon Showalter from the Christian Post. Brandon, you have got an article up at ChristianPost.com about China. Tell us what is, well, first of all, we have had lots of conversations here about the persecution that Christians in China are experiencing, but you've got some really good news in this article in terms of the spread of the gospel and how that's happening. So can you share with us the good news there?
Absolutely. Yes. Despite the intense crackdown on Christianity in China and the state-sponsored opposition to churches there, and just it's brutal persecution going on of late in China, God still continues to work miracles and do wondrous things. The Chinese, as I'm sure you know, Carmen, are developing all over the world, and they're investing in all kinds of places in Africa. They're pouring a lot of money into it, and some of those Africans, God bless them, are evangelizing the Chinese who are there in their countries, and then they're going back to China with their new faith. And it's kind of remarkable to see how, you know, God will continue his mission regardless of who communicates the gospel and how. I mean, I've read, you know, the article that I've written here doesn't go into this detail so much, but, you know, the Chinese going into Africa, I don't know how many of their projects are ethical or how well they treat all of their workers, but, you know, given that they're communists and the people that run a lot of those companies aren't the most ethical of people, but then people are hearing the gospel in Africa, and then they're going back, and it's causing problems for the Chinese government because they are hostile to religion. I don't know if you know this, but Muslims are also being tormented in China as well these days. But it's a remarkable thing, and you know, visitors, if you go to the coastal province of Guizhou in China, you'll now hear South African accented English and see houses with crosses. You know, African migrants are moving to China in large numbers. Some of them are, you know, very zealous for the gospel, and they're willing to, you know, flout the rules that are placed on religious activity in China. So despite its best efforts, China is now losing its fight against Christianity. There were reports that said last week when I reported on this, and the growing influx of citizens from Africa is yet another way in which God is still on the move.
Don't you just love that? Like, right?
The government. It's amazing.
Right. So as I was reading your piece, what's ringing in the back of my head, what's echoing, you know, when Jesus is, I think this is the version of the Great Commission recorded in the first chapter of the book of Acts, where Jesus is talking about, look, once you receive the Holy Spirit, once the Holy Spirit comes upon you, you will be my witnesses. And then he talks about these like growing concentric circles, Jerusalem and all Judea and Samaria and to the ends of the earth. And I think so often, Brandon, we have imagined that that is always a move from east to west. Like, we have imagined that somehow the growing edge of the gospel is always from east to west. And what we're really talking about here is a movement of the gospel from west to east. And it is, it's extraordinary, right?
It's remarkable. Yeah.
It's totally, it really is. It's remarkable, and we ought to be celebrating it. I appreciate the way that it reminds me that Christianity is a global religion, that it's a global, actually, it's a global faith. It's a faith that I share with my brothers and sisters in Africa, whom God is providing ways to be his witnesses, be witnesses of Jesus in China, which is not a place to which, you know, I could ever be a witness. And it's through this, it's through the relationships of people being able to, you know, go from China into Africa, really for, you know, probably gain that's maybe not too godly, but what they're getting when they arrive in Africa is the gospel, and then they're taking that home with them. And it's just, it's really, it's an extraordinary, it's a wonderful, and it's wonderful, and I think that we ought to celebrate stories like this when we see them. Okay, so from that to something just horrific, and I only want to spend a couple minutes on it because it's so bad. Tell us about the new trend of people who are having abortions, and yet they're having baby showers for their abortions. Like, this doesn't even make any sense to me.
Well, it is just, I'm amazed to see the degree with which good and evil is, has become stark. The contrast has become so stark. And I, yeah, it's the latest trend where instead of having a baby shower, people are throwing abortion showers. And it's the article that you referenced was from singer Amanda Palmer, and it's she's on tour, and she wrote a song and had a handbook for any woman who was on her way to an abortion, and it celebrates this sort of as a way to mark this awful thing. There's this kind of celebration that goes along with it, and some have pointed out that it sort of makes a pro-life argument that though she doesn't think so, it's actually a cry for help. You know, I'm stumbling around for words just because it is so horrific just to think that someone would mark this event with celebration, just like, you know, Governor Cuomo lit up the One World Tower in pink lights to celebrate the passage of the legislation not so long ago that legalized, you know, abortion up until birth and removed the remaining restrictions on the practice in that state. But it's disturbing. We're seeing an increasingly brazen celebration of evil in our land, and we do have to remember that even as people are doing this, yes, it's evil and wrong, but it's also a cry for help. These are desperate people who, you know, as Jesus said on the cross, Father, forgive them, they know not what they do.
So, Brandon, here's what really strikes me about this particular song. Amanda Palmer actually recognizes in one of the stanzas of this song that this is a grief. That it's a strange grief, but it's a grief that if you look at women on the street and you know the statistics, even though they may not help. Isn't it amazing how we can never tell who is in an identical hell? Like, she is acknowledging that that abortion is grievous, that it takes a human life, that it hell bounds a person. Like, it's extraordinary. The truth in the song, if you actually pay attention to it, and then it's just, you know, tremendously gross as well. So, Brandon, we're going to leave it right there, and we're going to take a minute here on Mornings with Carmen to lighten up. Brandon Showalter from the Christian Post, we look forward to the forthcoming Christian Post podcast, and thank you for joining us on Mornings with Carmen.
Thank you, Carmen. Have a great day.
You too. Okay, so is anybody else thinking after listening to that maybe we need to slow down a little bit? I had an experience yesterday driving back from an event in Thomasville, Georgia, which, by the way, shout out to everybody that I met down there. What a blessing to be with you this weekend. I had an opportunity to engage with a Georgia Highway Patrolman on the side of the road who perceived me to be going too fast in life. And I just want to say shout out today to Trooper Moses. Thank you for our conversation on the side of the road. Thank you for caring about my life. Thank you for being concerned about the welfare of me and everybody else on the road. Thank you for the reminder to slow down, that life matters a whole lot more than whether or not we get where we think we ought to be going as fast as we think we need to get there. So just a little reminder today that law enforcement's out there actually for our good, to help us live within boundaries that we've all agreed upon in our culture are good to live within. So certainly justice and mercy today, but also just a good reminder to slow down. So as we slow down, I hope that you're going to take some time today to slow down and spend some time with God in His Word. If you need a Bible, this is actually the last week for the Truth for Life Spurgeon Study Bible giveaway that we're doing here at My Faith Radio. So please go to myfaithradio.com, enter to win one of the copies of the Spurgeon Study Bible that we are giving away during this month. Again, this is the last week to do so. So if you have not gotten a copy yet, please go to myfaithradio.com, grab your copy of the Truth for Life Spurgeon Study Bible. We'll be right back. So this is Carmen LaBerge. You're listening to Mornings with Carmen. Last night, the president announced he is delaying a tariff deadline with China. He's preparing to travel to Vietnam for a second summit with North Korea about denuclearization. The Mueller report is likely to be released. Congress is likely to pass a measure blocking the president's declaration of a national security on the U.S. southern border. How do we bring the mind of Christ to bear on all of that? Well, we're going to ask Adam Carrington from Hillsdale College. He's holding on the line right now. Those conversations and more up next right here on Mornings with Carmen.
In our modern American culture, youthfulness is celebrated while aging is dreaded. This is Jim Garlow. We're a culture obsessed with the next generation, their ideas, and their new values, while our elders are often overlooked and forgotten. Their life experiences, history, and wisdom are viewed as outdated and old-fashioned. And like an antique piece of furniture locked away in a storage area somewhere, elders too often are left forgotten with their story, worth, and value never fully discovered. There's a reason in the Bible that the wise at the city gates are called elders, a title of distinction. They're appointed to shepherd God's flock. Proverbs 31:23 describes the husband of the so-called Proverbs 31 woman. Her husband is respected at the city gate, where he takes his seat among the elders of the land. The elder leaders possessed life experiences and wise judgment. They were respected. There's more at jimgarlow.com.
Welcome back to Mornings with Carmen. I'm Carmen LaBerge. Thank you for taking us along with you on your journey today. Adam Carrington, welcome back.
Great to be here with you, Carmen. Thanks for having me back.
You know, there's so little for us to talk about week to week. Have you noticed that?
Yeah, I'm sorry that the news cycle gets so boring at this point. That I wish that I could burn calories the way I have to burn through articles. I think I'd be in a lot better shape.
No, so that's exactly right. So the challenge before you and I in the next few minutes is to help equip listeners to be as prepared as they can be for the conversations of the day and to bring the mind of Christ to bear on those conversations. So if it's okay with you, I'm going to jump right in with something that happened last night, which is that President Trump announced via Twitter that he has delayed a tariff deadline as trade talks continue with China. China has then charged into what is known as a bull market overnight. For those of us who took Economics 101 a really long time ago, could you remind us just what is a tariff and why should we care about trade talks with China?
Right. And I think that's a great way to put it so that it's not just a headline. Tariffs are basically taxes that are placed on foreign goods, goods coming from another country, and they are taxed for the privilege of coming into the United States and buying and selling. So basically a tax to enter the United States. And
for the super layperson here, that's so I can turn over something and it can say made in China.
Exactly.
Okay.
So that it can get into the store from China. How does it get from China to you? A tariff is a tax that is paid at the border to come in. And why you should care is sort of along two lines, and this is really shows the battle lines about trade that are going on now. On one hand, you may care as a worker because you may be making a competing American good of the same thing, and a tariff might make it so that your product is cheaper. Therefore, you might have a better chance of keeping your job or getting a higher wage while doing your job. On the other hand, the other side of it is you as a consumer, that if a item has a tariff placed on it, how do they make up the difference? They don't just take the loss. They normally raise the price on you when you buy it. And so a lot of the debates going on right now about trade with China is, in addition to whether they're doing things unethically, which I think is actually unquestionable, it's also to what degree do we balance our desire to help American workers and our desire to have viable goods, and what if anything should tariffs have to do with that? And that's a major debate in our country that I think is underlying all of these moves.
Again, my conversation is with Adam Carrington. We are rolling through some of the headlines of the day so that each of us can be equipped for those conversations in the culture. And so, Adam, we've got this Declaration of a National Emergency that is going to include, you know, the ability to improve border security at the southern border. We've got polling saying that Democrats out there in the country are actually interested in their party moving to a more centrist position on lots of things. We've got a Democrat-controlled Congress that's likely to move legislation early this week that blocks the president's national emergency declaration. I find myself saying this is not the way that it's supposed to work. And so let's just unpack the politics a little bit from how it's supposed to work. And so I realize it's not a very well-framed question, but this is not the way that it's supposed to work.
Right. I'm teaching Article 1 and Article 2 of the Constitution in a class right now, and the relationship between the legislative and executive branch has become both toxic in its politics and dysfunctional in its ability to do anything. And I think that this just shows that that's the case, that the president was unable to secure funding the normal way by legislative enactment, because Congress, according to the Constitution, has the power of the purse, the power to dispense money, and has instead declared a national emergency to try to get those funds. And I think that it just shows that the normal ways of trying to work across the aisle or to work out differences, that we are at an impasse on the question of immigration, and that impasse on policy is part of a larger dysfunction in how we work out those disagreements in policy, that we now resort to national emergencies or to declarations of them when fairly clearly this was a legislative process before that. So, yes, you're right. This is not the way it's supposed to work. Congress is supposed to pass the laws. The executive is supposed to enforce them. But instead, we don't have that going on much at all at this point. I mean, one good example of that is we haven't passed a normal budget for running the government in years. I mean, going well before President Trump took office. It's become sort of a new dysfunctional norm.
Okay, so I think that when when you say that, right, we have a new dysfunctional norm. And when we imagine, like, how things rock and roll along actually as well as they do. Like, this is one of the things that amazes me about the resiliency of not only our democracy, but America in general. We've got all of these things going on at the, you know, sort of headline news level, and they're important and they're very impactful to a lot of people. But most folks are going to roll through their day and their week and this month and really not be personally affected by this story in particular, other than it's going to, you know, it's going to scream across the headlines. What do Democrats really want? What is polling telling us that Democrats really want? Do they want socialism?
It, what the polling is telling us is actually that there's a split in the Democratic Party. There's a more socialist element, some of the newer Bernie Sanders and similar Democrats that are wanting that. And there's an element that wants to be more, I would say, still basically very heavily regulated capitalist. So very controlled economy, but not, I wouldn't say, not quite socialist. And the polling that's just come out has said that Democrats are, by a noticeable margin, not overwhelming margin, hoping that the Democratic Party moves toward the latter, moves toward, you could say, more of a Joe Biden kind of Democratic Party that wants a large involvement of the government in the economy, wants the government very powerful, but doesn't want to completely go socialist, doesn't want to completely take over the economy for the purposes of government intervention. And that's a very interesting statistic, given that the party seems to be lurching the other direction. And one needs to ask, you know, what will the Democratic primary voters do? Because it seems like the party might be moving in a different direction than their own voters want them to.
So, Adam, you and I need to take a quick break. But when we come back, I'd like for us to prepare ourselves for the possible release of the Mueller report. And for the possibility of that happening while the president is in Vietnam for a summit with North Korean dictator Kim Jong-un, because it feels like those two stories would be fun to bring into conversation with each other. So that's up next here on Mornings with Carmen. I'm Carmen LaBerge talking with Adam Carrington from Hillsdale College, and we'll be right back.
God.
Welcome back to Mornings with Carmen. I'm your host, Carmen LaBerge, continuing my conversation with Adam Carrington from Hillsdale College. Adam, the vice president, Mike Pence, is out of the country in Colombia dealing with issues related to Venezuela. He's going to have a really pretty powerful opportunity for a photo op with Juan Guaido. We've got the president of the United States headed to Vietnam for a summit with North Korean dictator Kim Jong-un. I don't even know if I'm supposed to call him a dictator anymore, because apparently, you know, we're warming up to him. We're trying to denuclearize the Korean Peninsula. And in the midst of all of that, we're all kind of anticipating that the Mueller report is going to drop. I'm going to just let you wade into that.
Yes, we were just talking about how there's just no news, and I think that could maybe break the system. I think a way to think about it is, first, you know, taking the foreign policy questions, this really is at the heart of what a president does sort of on his own. Of course, there's limits on it, but the president, the executive branch, is the branch that interacts with other countries, either through ambassadors, making treaties, through diplomatic relations, through war, if that's what it sometimes comes to, which we're definitely hoping nothing like that comes of any of these. And so this week will be a real test, a continued test of how this presidency and this administration works on those levels. And I think what we're going to have to look at in North Korea is the first summit with the North Korean regime was done to a lot of fanfare. There were claims that there were progress made, but at this point, it looks as if North Korea has played a little bait and switch. If you really look what's happened since then, they made a lot of promises, some good commitments, and then seem to have pulled out of almost all of them. So what I'll be looking there is President Trump, you know, how skilled is he going to be able to pull out keeping the lines of communication open, but making demands that really can be met? Because the North Koreans have sort of done this to president after president, making promises and then pulling out, and it looks like they've done it to him. Venezuela, I hope something can happen. It's a humanitarian crisis. It is a problem that could really come to our doorstep, and I really do hope the vice president's able to make you know, some inroads there. And then to bring it to the Mueller report, my bigger worry about it coming out in relation to, as you were connecting those stories, is just we know the president is a man that works on instinct, and sometimes I might even say on impulse. And I hope that if it comes out, it's not a distraction to him, that he can set it aside until, you know, he can get back to the States and see and you know, what the landscape is like. Because, you know, I think the Mueller report, they need to get it out when it's time. They don't need to sit on it. But at the same time, I think the president and vice president need to focus on very important diplomatic missions this week.
So let's talk about some expectations related to the Mueller report. Remind people what the special counsel was actually charged to do. And then, you know, I got to say, Adam, I don't anticipate any so-called smoking gun coming out of this. I feel like from the indictments that we've seen so far, you know, it's going to be a report, but I don't think it's going to be particularly explosive. What are your expectations?
You're asking what the special counsel was created to do. It was to look at Russian interference into the 2016 election, and particularly including was there any cooperation between the Trump campaign and Russia on that front. And I think that you're right that we shouldn't have massive expectations either way. And what I mean by that is my guess is they're going to find a lot of probably unethical and maybe some illegal doings by a number of people in the campaign of President Trump. But they're not going to find anything, any smoking gun that there was actually collusion with the Russian regime. And I think that you're right to say that for that reason, there's not going to be, I think it's going to land with a bit of a thud and be a bit of a dud there. And that therefore, I think the better thing to do is once it's out, ask actually the question of making sure that the Russians don't interfere too much in elections in the future against whatever an administration wants.
So, Adam, let's talk about when you say once it comes out, how much of it do you expect us as the public to see?
I think in the end we'll see a good bit of it, if not all of it. And what you're referring to is the Mueller report won't just get posted online. It actually will be submitted to government entities, and then it'll be up to, say, the Justice Department, among others, to make it public if they want. But I think the pressure to do so will be intense enough, and especially if it clears the president of direct collusion with Russia, which has sort of been the gold standard of his opponents of what they want to see, I think that it'll be in their interest, even if it shows some highly unethical or other problematic things, it'll be in their interest to put it out. So I think in the end we'll see most, if not all of it, even if it might not be the exact day it gets submitted.
So remind folks, because I think that since you and I have spoken last, William Barr has become the new Attorney General of the United States. Just remind us of the relationships, some of those relationships between the Attorney General, the Justice Department, the FBI, the special counsel. Like, you know, because if we don't operate in Washington, we don't really remember how all these things work.
Right. And the Attorney General is the head lawyer for the president, and that office has existed since really Washington, George Washington, and the Justice Department is in many ways at the core of what the president's job is domestically. Domestically, the president's job is to carry out and execute the laws. That's what the executive power is, and the Justice Department is the core department that does that. And so the Attorney General is basically the head of that department. He's the head lawyer, therefore in many ways the head prosecutor. And so the relationship between that department and the president is a pretty substantial one. But what's interesting is because we live in a regime of laws, not of men, laws rule, not human beings, then there's still going to be some distance between the president as a man and the Justice Department as an office, because even though he is in charge to make sure the laws are faithfully executed, he himself is also subject to those laws. So when it's anyone else, the president is fully in charge of the department and is making sure that we are kept safe by the fact that the laws are not only made but actually put into place. In a situation like this, he's still ultimately in charge, but there's some distance to just make sure that the laws are carried out fairly, regardless of who is the subject of the investigation.
Professor Carrington, thank you so much, as always, for helping us understand and put into context some of the major headlines that we face as Americans, and have a great day teaching today at Hillsdale.
Oh, it's always a great day when I get to do that. So thank you. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So that's Adam Carrington. He's an assistant professor of politics at Hillsdale College. And we'll be right back here on Mornings with Carmen for more conversations about the headline news of the day. I'm Carmen LeBurge, and I am with you wherever you're going. Welcome back to Mornings with Carmen. I'm your host, Carmen LeBurge. I hope that you are already off to a great day. So this is the day that the Lord has made. We are rejoicing and we are being glad in it. That means that we are, wow, we're praising God in the midst of all circumstances. So I don't exactly know the circumstances that you're facing today, but if you're like me, it's a Monday morning. And so you are facing sort of the crushing reality that all of the things that you needed to get, or you thought you needed to get done in the last 4 or 5 days, really aren't done yet. So I picked up my car last night, after traveling, and this gentleman said, "Hey, have a great weekend." And I said, "Dude, it's like 10 o'clock on Sunday night. Have a great week." And he's like, "Did I miss the weekend?" And I'm like, "Oh, I'm so sorry." So I was so pray for that guy today, because he completely missed the opportunity to have a weekend. I hope you're having some Sabbath rest at least someday during the week, even if it doesn't come on Sunday. And we're going to talk with one of our Jewish friends who celebrates the Sabbath on a different day of the week, but brings information to bear across the lines from Judaism to Christianity. So that's up next here on Mornings with Carmen. I'm your host, Carmen LeBurge. Thanks for listening to this podcast of Mornings with Carmen LeBurge from Faith Radio. If you haven't, you can subscribe to automatically receive the podcast through iTunes or the Google Play Music app. That way, you never miss an episode. It's also available anytime at myfaithradio.com.